This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
I am going to talk to the CEO of Higher Health, Professor Alwalia Ramnick, and he's going to they're going to take us through, really, you know, the university is in the process of implementing mandatory vaccination at campuses. This has sparked a heated debate in the post-school education and training sector. It has no doubt, especially amongst universities, with universities in South Africa seemingly supporting mandatory vaccines. Earlier today, I did tell you about the disruptive effects of COVID-19 and how they just, you know, at higher education visited upon massive transitions which had never been thought of in the sector, from contact learning to virtual learning, which has come with all sort of limitations. And as we plan for the 2022 academic year and of course the fourth wave, there are all sort of considerations in the sector. But I do want to understand how heated is the debate and who's leading and who will have the final say, because ultimately all institutions of higher learning, in particular universities and universities of technologies, have their own independent councils and they exercise a degree of autonomy. Prof. Alwalia, good morning and welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Lukono, and thank you, and good morning to everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us. Perhaps let's just talk about how hectic is the debate currently within the post-school education and training sector insofar as considering mandatory vaccines is concerned, Prof.
Lukono, it's a very important debate, and it's a very timely debate. I think this is at a time which is important, and I think it is absolutely in the rights of institutions of higher learning to now put a debate, put a consultative process in understanding their environment and their challenges in order for them to be able to survive, specifically around how the COVID-19, the mutations that are happening, the transmissibility of this virus, which is extremely growing in every stages of this mutant. And you must also remember that, you know, our institutions are very vulnerable spaces. You know, we have residences, if you ask Higher Health, since the first wave, our whole team has been deployed towards just managing outbreaks in residences. You just need about 3-4 students becoming positive. They become positive sometimes in the environment or outside. And then, you know, they reside together, they live together, they eat together. And it spreads like wildfire, because this is how COVID-19 actually spreads, you know. So to be in real honest, we are a very vulnerable sector. We have residences, we've got classrooms, we've got closed dwellings, exactly what the virus likes to mutate to and move into, becoming highly transmissible. So obviously these are very pertinent debates. We've got health sciences in our own institution where our students are in close proximity to hospitals. This is where the practical learning happens. And it poses an entire occupational health risk in that. So it's very pertinent. Again, my word of caution is too early to put mandatory vaccination, and there are reasons for it. One of the big reasons is we're just 3 weeks into maturing our vaccination program for 18 and above. As a doctor, it's easy for me to say, get a needle. But I understand that it takes time for people to make a decision of putting a needle into their arms. And we have to be very respectful about that. We need to continuously use first the arsenals of our vaccine promotion, fighting vaccine hesitancy, use platforms like yourself to continuously promote the science of why and where and what is the reason of why vaccines are so effective and why we want it. And I think there will be a stage where regulations have to be put, and we have to look into which faculties are going to be very much highly predisposed to occupational health risk versus the others. And a phased approach of regulations needs to be brought in. But not now. We're just 3 weeks. People not even have their first doses. We're maturing it. We're getting more access to vaccines to people. So, but it's needed, not now.
Prof, I wonder, in a country like ours, you know, where uptake of, you know, vaccination, well, one, it's one thing to talk about the availability of stock. It's another, though, to talk about uptake in the sense that, I mean, the provinces that are doing pretty well are just knocking at about 25% of the adult population being fully vaccinated, that being the Eastern Cape and the Limpopo province. Here in Gauteng, the latest stats were sitting at about just under 17%. In that environment where generally society at large, there hasn't been significant uptake as we would have loved to see, how difficult does this, you know, conversation become from universities, given that they are not isolated from the realities of our society at large?
And you're absolutely right. And, you know, when it becomes a bit more difficult at the university level, because you're talking to educated young South Africans, which we hope that they will come up and take vaccination and go back to their families and promote those adults and their families, because they are our biggest transforming change agent that we have been pushing emphasis towards, a lot of peer-to-peer influences in this sector. And then, of course, you're absolutely right. You know, as much as I'm very watchful towards the fact that we're still early stages and people take time to make decisions. It's difficult. It's not an easy decision to put needles in their arms, but it's the most needed decision. So, and the data is projecting towards this. First of all, we have enough access to vaccines now. So that is one thing that South Africa has overcome. But now getting people out of their home. So we always believed in the modeling work that we do. There are three type of population in any part of the world, including South Africa. The 1/3 of the population is the population that will stand even 8 hours and get their vaccine because they understand and they want vaccines. And many of your listeners are one of those. But then there is that 1/3 in the middle that is not against vaccines, but are looking at easy access of vaccines, scared to go to the hospital to get a vaccine. They want to get it close to them. And that's why Higher Health is building vaccination centers inside every university, vaccine points in every TVET college, so that easy access is possible, so that we can promote that 1/3 to not to worry about. You know, there's a whole drive on Uber and taxis. Uber is paying your trip to the vaccine point. So that's the issue of access, and that's the 1/3 in the middle. There is a last 1/3 that is absolutely currently influenced by the anti-vaxxers, and they made up their mind they will not do it. And the big question is, how do we continuously put pressure? And that's where the question of regulations come, mandatory word come. And I think South Africa is entering into its middle 1/3, which is the population where people want to take that decision of access first. And we are hoping that through this vaccine promotion, bringing more access of vaccine more closer, and that's why I said the vaccine program is maturing, is to get to at least 2/3 of our population extremely quickly, which will help in actually defining the trajectory of this pandemic in South Africa. And I can tell you, South Africa is a youth country. This is the phase that will decide how we overtake the virus, or the virus overtakes us by mutating the way it mutates. So it's very clear signs, and I only appeal that vaccine be promoted, and those 1/3 that I've spoken about and the last 1/3 take their decisions far quickly than we hope for.
My guest is Professor Alwali, CEO at Higher Health, and we are discussing the issue of universities considering the implementation of mandatory vaccination at campuses. If you may have a question quickly for him, 0861-987-000 is the dial this morning. Prof, my critique really is twofold about the sector. And I mean, I've been involved in the education sector for a long, long time now, both as a student and a scholar. Is one that our consultation processes in the sector are not always as participatory as possible. Who is leading this conversation for a possibility of mandatory vaccines? And how are we making sure that this process is as participatory as possible? There's always been a great sense of managerialism in the sector, wherein even as lecturers, you'll find a decision having been made about how to assess and not to assess without ever having been consulted as to how you think this is possible or not possible in the world of possibilities. And this is why many academics get to be despondent. So how are you ensuring that this conversation is steered in the right direction and there is buy-in? Because, as you said, some of the people that are not vaccinating are academics themselves.
And you're right, absolutely. And some of them are from health sciences, students in health sciences that influence other peers not to, which becomes far more dangerous for us. Because if a health science student says to other students who go to his peer in the health science faculty, and he says no, and it just becomes a widespread in, a misinformation process. So you're right. You know, as I speak to you right now, I'm in St. George's Hotel, and we are doing a consultation for all the institutions of higher learning in the province of Gauteng, specifically the universities for now. And similarly, we'll be embarking this evening on the TVET sector, where we will be consulting every TVET college. So the deans of health sciences, the dean of student affairs, resident directors, not just the vice chancellors and the management at this moment. Also, SRC presidents are here when I'm speaking to you right now. The aim is to talk about, and we also have other issues of gender-based violence, mental health, which is obviously a far bigger pandemic also moving into our system. But one of the issues of regulatory and mandatory vaccination is in discussion right now, is in consultation right now. We're looking at opinions from what is an average person at an institutional level, at the level of a director who's controlling one section like student affairs or looking at residences or looking at this. And then similarly, vice chancellors and the management is embarking their own consultation with the Senate, which I speak to you as I speak, most of the institutions are doing. But I agree with you, being very big institutions of higher learning, being multi-diversified system with many faculties and system, it is very pertinent that the consultations be very, very close to individuals at every level so that an informed decision can be made. Even if some people will not agree on your decision, at least they were aware of why you took a decision. And I think the explanation of why we take a decision is far more pertinent, because it is very critical for people to understand the reason why the institution had to go through that tough route of making a decision. So I think I also appeal to all the institutions. While Higher Health is embarking on a provincial consultation, it's done Western Cape, we are in Gauteng, and next week we move to KwaZulu-Natal. And it's a process that we will embark on, whether it's a university consultation, whether it's a TVET consultation or a community education training system. And we also have the same process with the private higher education. So higher education is very, very big. It's just not the universities and the law.
Absolutely. I mean, we're looking at anywhere between 2 million upwards if you consider the entire sector in terms of private and public across the colleges and higher education institutions such as universities and universities of technology. Prof, I wonder though, I mean, you spoke about something very crucial earlier to say, you know, people in these institutions of higher education are learned people, they are knowledgeable people. But I wonder, you know, we talk about forms of literacy beyond just being able to read and write, whether our public health literacy levels are really at the state where they ought to be, because we've had to really start at a very basic level just about vaccines, what they do and can't do. And then at times, as you would know, when you're teaching or trying to win people over a narrative or a debate or some part of knowledge that has been produced, it may take time because they get confused by the milieu of contradictory stances that come out. Have we done enough as the post-school education and training sector to assist government in making this public health education as accessible as possible and taking it to people as much as possible, or have we continued to remain in our quote-unquote ivory towers?
So Higher Health has embarked on this ambitious journey, exactly what Lukono is saying, which is, how do we transform this country? And we feel that the transformation of this country depends on our post-school system, young people. If we can have 2 million every year South Africans understanding value of human life, value of health and wellness, mental health, issues of gender-based violence, issues that they deal with on day-to-day basis in their family, in the communities, among themselves, and also affects our productivity and can be a big peer influence back into their families, they can form stable families. They can have relationship with their wives, and there's no single mothers and no abusive relationship. Exactly what this generation of South Africa is experiencing And we are a very young country, let's be very honest. We're just 27 years old. We have inherited a very difficult past. And when you have a country like that, you need a transformation education process where stability in family structure comes, and then stability in education comes, stability in progress and growth comes. Parents, children see parents, children get educated, family structure moves, life changes, middle class comes in far more predominance in that reality. And that is exactly what Higher Health wants to be achieving. And we have now established an extramural curriculum across all our institutions of higher learning. Whether you go to any TVET campus or a university campus or a CET, you will find an extramural curriculum. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of young people enrolling into this curriculum. This curriculum is on chapters of GBV, mental health, HIV. We believe that before we teach music and French as extramural, it's more important to teach what South Africa is grappling with.
Yeah.
And I think there is where we are winning. We are seeing about 15,000 peer educators in South Africa and higher education institutions who are taking this charge. If you ask me how we are fighting COVID vaccine, we are fighting through a peer-to-peer influence.
Prof, before I let you go, Prof, I just have this question from one of our listeners on Twitter saying I must ask you about, you know, whether there are investigations on the efficacy of one dose to people that previously had COVID, the issue of natural immunity versus vaccine immunity. I mean, this is a big, big debate in the science circles as to how far you can go with natural immunity, even though some people are saying, you know, we definitely don't want to experiment with it, but once you've had COVID, there is a degree of natural immunity.
So definitely, you know, what we have clearly seen is that if COVID enters a human body makes a response. Because this was a new virus, we never had a response, so we had to build a new response. And that response that we built is called a natural immunity, which was through it. Clearly, it has been seen when the first COVID variant came into South Africa, and then the Beta, which was detected in South Africa, and now the Delta, because these are the three predominant variants that took the entire South African variants. What we've seen with every variant is that it takes that the previous variant, which produced an immunity into the human body, first of all, weans off with time. Mm. Secondly, the mutations that we now are seeing in the new variants have something called escape mutation, which means that they can escape the first immunity, not 100%, but there are mutations that can escape or evade the immune response, but predominantly happens because the immunity weans off with time. Mm. But vaccines, on the other side, have clearly shown far more stronger immune response and a far longer immune system into it. What the science is now studying, because it's very, very only about a year since the vaccines have been introduced into our system, not even a year. In South Africa, it's been more than like 6 months. In the world, it's about like 9 to 10 months. That we have now started realizing that the vaccines that we had given are also in the process that can wean off, for which the debate now is on boosters. Mm-hmm. And the question is, when, at what stage boosters? Because when the booster comes, your immune response becomes again 8 to 7-fold, 4 stronger, and it takes you another longer period to evade the more variants or the COVID that is coming.
Okay.
So I think the vaccine immunity is stronger than the natural immunity. And even though you had COVID, the advice is do still take the vaccine, because it will help you fight other variants far more strongly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we need to move on.
Prof, thank you so much for your time. Let me let you go back to your meeting, but we'll continue to keep a close watch into these developments.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.